Good morning. Thanks for tuning in to KRBD Ketchikan. I'm Maria Dudzak, joined in the studio by Lee Skidmore, and she is here to give us some tips on gardening terms and other gardening hints. So if you do have questions, you can give us a call, 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning. And yes, we're going to talk about some vocabulary today. But this isn't going to be like high school vocabulary or learning a foreign language vocabulary. It's kind of a interesting thing, and some people are determined to learn what that word means, and other people, oh, I don't care. It'll work anyway, kind of attitude. So some of the things that I thought we would talk about today would be deadhead, damping off, pinching, disbudding, being leggy, wuzzled, and foliar fertilizing.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you familiar with any of those?
I've heard of them. I'm not. Some of them I think I probably know. But
good. Good. Well, people I talk to about, you know, do you ever look in the glossary? Do you have your garden books? Nope. And I don't care. It just works. And they know that everything they need to plant the seeds is on the seed packet. Or it's on the label that comes in the plant. And that's all they need to know to do what they want to do. And that's perfect. For those people, that's exactly what they need. But if you ever decide to go to a conference or, you know, a flower show, they may use terms that, gee, I didn't get all that information because I don't know what that word means. A long time ago, I went to a cactus and succulent show in California, and the person who was leading the discussion was speaking specifically to the judges. And he said, now remember, if the cactus is wuzzled, it is disqualified. I thought, okay, what does that mean? And wuzzled in that sense means that the plant has dehydrated enough that the leaves have become wrinkled. And that even though you rewater it, it doesn't completely unwrinkle. And I thought, wow, that's a fun term. I can tell people, oh, this one's wuzzled. It can't go. So anyway.
And now is that specific to cacti?
I think it is. Because he was specifically talking to the people who were going to judge at that show. If you look it up online, Wuzzle talks about cartoon characters and a specific Disney something or other. And I thought, oh, well, okay. Anyway, let's talk about damping off, because that seems to be a concern that many people have. You plant your seeds, you get them up a couple inches high, and then you see the stem right at the soil line start turning a little bit darker, and then the next time you look at your little seedlings, they've fallen over and are dying. And that's just damping off, and that's caused by many things, you know, bacteria in the soil, or you damaged them when you were planting, or you crushed them when you were moving them around, or something like that. And that's, there's nothing you can do to save them. So
it's a condition.
It's a condition, and it's deadly. Deadheading is simply taking off the dead flower blossoms. And when you do that, it gives the plant a chance. It won't be making seeds out of those flowers. It will be putting its energy toward growing bigger and stronger and producing more flowers. So you just pinch them with your thumb or a little pair of scissors. You don't want to pull them off because you might pull off the whole stem. So, easy things.
And is pinching the same thing, or is that a different term?
It means about the same thing because you're removing something. But think about your basil plant, and you know how the two little leaves come out at the top? When you pinch, you take those little leaves out so that the plant will grow new leaves and stems lower so that the plant is bushier and doesn't get tall and leggy, which is another term we know. Leggy just means that it's grown so fast looking for light that it, there's too much space between the leaves and it's not, the stem isn't strong enough to support the top part of the plant. So you want to keep them pinched. With basil, as soon as it gets that second set of leaves, I start watching to pinch. And as soon as I can get my fingers and thumbnail in there, I'm pinching out those center leaves because I want the plants to be able to stay on my windowsill. So I keep them pinched. And then you pinch the top ones. And then when the side branches get big enough and have leaves, then you start pinching on those. And you can either toss those that you pinched in your salad or just eat them because you like the taste of fresh basil. But that's pinching. And you can do that with many plants. Okay, so then let's talk about...
And talking about legginess, that you mentioning the basil, but that could be any plant that's leggy.
That could be any plant.
And what causes it? It's growing too quickly?
It's growing too fast. It may be over-fertilization. It may be lack of light. I was looking at your tomato plants in the window, and they seem to be somewhat leggy. They the stem isn't strong enough to support all the leaves and branches, so I would consider it leggy. Now, don't pinch your tomato plants when they're babies. You know, let them grow. And then when there's a thing to do when you're ready to cut the top of your tomato plant off so that the tomatoes that it has already set ripen. But legginess just refers to growing too fast and stems too thin to support it. Let's talk about foliar feeding. You know, we put fertilizer and the fertilizer comes up through the roots. Foliage is the green part of the plant. And fertilizers are made in liquid form, and the nutrients have been worked with so that they're just almost totally liquid. And then you spray them on your plant leaves, and the plant absorbs that nutrient through the leaves, and it helps feed the plant. So you can feed them through the plant, through the roots and the leaves, and have a much healthier, stronger plant.
And how do you do the leaf feeding?
You get a sprayer bottle and you buy specific foliar feeding nutrients. And then you mix them up, put them in your sprayer. If you want to do a small area, use a hand sprayer. If you want to spray your whole garden, use an air compressed sprayer and just have fun spraying.
And it's specifically labeled as foliar food?
It is labeled as foliar food. I usually spray my... vegetables when they're young. I always spray my African violets. I use a blossom booster, which, you know, promotes bigger flowers. I spray that on my flowers. Just, you know, you kind of have fun playing with your stuff. So we did pinch. Okay, disbud. It seems like horrible to take buds off a flower because what you want are the flowers. But like with African violets, if you want to have a flush of bloom at one time, you can pinch the blossom stalks off so that the plant, I don't know, I'm talking about the plant like it were a human, thinks, oh, they took that one off. I better make three more. So you get many more blossoms if you pinch your blossoms off, if you disbud. Let's say you're taking it to a show or you want it on the table at a baby shower. You keep it pinched until several weeks before when you want it on display. And then you quit disbudding, and then you have two or three times as many budstocks as you would normally.
And can you do that? This is only certain types of plants, correct?
Well, you can do it like with dahlias. If you want, if you have the big dinner plate dahlias, you can remove the blossoms along the other blossoms so you have that one central blossom. But most any plant can be disbudded.
And it would be something that has multiple
buds. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Because if you pinched off just the one, you would have nothing, I would guess.
Well, if you have roses, you can take off the side buds. So that the one in the center gets the nutrients. It just, you know, this is where a garden book would be helpful. In the back are glossaries, and in the back are also answers to questions like, which plants could I disbud? Which plants do this? Which plants should you do that with? I have several, but most of mine I've gotten at Rendezvous Thrift Store in the book section. Excuse me, the books there are $5 for a dollar. So you can get a $30 garden book for 20 cents. So it's a place to go and look. Yeah. Let's see what else we have. Oh, burn. A plant can burn because...
burn, B-U-R-N?
Yes.
Like burning? Okay.
Burning. If you put too much fertilizer on it, you can burn it. If you put it out in the sun and it gets, before it's been hardened off, it will burn. If you put it too close to your grow lights, it can burn, and it just looks like it's sunburned. If you put it up next to the window and the window gets hot, it can burn. And it's just a matter of paying attention to what you're doing with the plant so that you don't put it in those situations. And if you're fertilizing, follow package directions. If it says, you know, 1/4 teaspoon to a gallon of water, don't think more is better. Follow the directions so that you don't accidentally burn the plant.
What looks like burn can also be, can it be other things?
It can be other. Sometimes if you water on a hot day and the water droplets stay on the leaves, the sun can heat those droplets and burn the leaves. What else? Oh,
underwatering, can that look similar or no?
No, if you underwater, it looks brown and it dries out. It's crinkly.
So what does a burn look like? It's not dry?
It's not dry. And it really looks, on your basil leaves, it'll be kind of a golden copper color. And it's just, you got too close to the light, got too close to the window. I don't know that I've ever seen fertilizer burn on vegetables. But, I mean, it's possible. So, and again, your glossary would tell you what fertilizer burn looks like and explain it to you, show you pictures of it, so that then you go, oh, that's what happened. I need to back off on the fertilizer. If you talk about annual and perennial, an annual plant is one that does its whole life cycle in 1 year. Comes up from seed, flowers, comes up, flowers, sets seeds, and dies. And then you harvest those seeds so that you can plant them again. A perennial is one that lasts 2 years or longer. And it's usually, we're talking about non-woody stems, which would be like, what's one that comes up? Oh, a hellebore would be a perennial. Because it comes up, flowers, and then dies back to the ground. And then it comes up the next year. The root itself doesn't die. So I did a lot of research, read lots of articles and stuff, but high school biology was a long time ago, so I'm trying to remember. So that was annual and perennial.
And then there are the, what is it, biennial?
Which, you know, and I'm still unclear on biennial. It means it lives 2 years. Or it flowers like foxglove every other year, biannual and biennial, and I'm still probably not clear. But if you're interested, call the Extension office and ask for help. Look in your garden books and see, and look up that specific plant, and it will tell you about what it is.
Because I know forget-me-nots are one, and I guess they say you should plant some every other year to try to get it to always be there. But
well, if they self-seed, which forget-me-nots are excellent at, you always have lots of them.
New seeds.
Right. And whenever you pull out the old plant, if you just kind of crumble it up, rub it between your hands, because they seem to dry out quickly, and sprinkle that where you want them, then you don't have to go and buy them. Excuse me. And other things you can do that way, too. Supposedly, the blue poppies can be done that way. You know, when the seed sets, sprinkle it around the mother plant, and you will eventually have babies.
But I know those are popular.
Oh, are they ever? And they're so gorgeous. Okay, let's talk about mulch and compost. Compost is deteriorating vegetable material. Whatever's in your garden that is not invasive can be thrown in your compost pile, heap, bin, and it will eventually break down to make compost. And there's a formula for making compost with green material, brown material, then add some enzymes that help compost happen so that you have your own. It's like, you raised it this year, you enjoyed it, you put it back in the compost pile, and it will help next year's plants become stronger and healthier. And if you're leaning towards organic gardening, that's exactly what you want to do, is build your own compost.
And with compost, it's just organic material. You wouldn't put in any mineral. I mean, I know some people throw soil in their compost, but that's not really...
That's not really part of compost. I don't think it hurts. Like with the potatoes, when I raise potatoes in the same bin, the third time I'm beginning to notice scab, which is a little mark on the skin that doesn't affect anything, it's time to stop using that soil for potatoes. But I can take my compost, mix it with that, the potato soil, and use it for whatever. I don't reuse it on vegetables, but for flowers or, you know, around my big trees and stuff, it's perfect. I mean, I don't think we're ever going to get any more soil, dirt, rocks, because what we got is in the earth now, and we just have to keep using it and find different ways to use it. So, you know, compost is easy to make. Put it off someplace and let it sit over the summer or over the winter, and you should have pretty good compost come spring. So,
you mentioned mulch.
Mulch. Mulch, by definition, is anything you put on top of the soil to either protect the soil from rain damage or wind, or help it stay moist, or just because it's colorful and you want a pretty color underneath your plants. Rocks, bark, chipped up tires, colored pumice. You can buy colored mulch that has been dyed. I have never used it. I don't know if it is vegetable dye that's being used or if it's a chemical dye, but it does change the way things look. You could have a white path going out through your garden, but I use mulch everywhere, specifically to help keep the soil from washing away in the downpours that we have. In the summertime, it's good for retaining moisture when we need it. I lost my train of thought. Okay, back to mulch. I use it everywhere. And I use it as kind of like a reminder that this row has been fluffed, you know, turned over, amendments added to it, and then after I plant my plants in there, then I'll put a thin layer of mulch so that, okay, that's done for this year. I don't have to go back and mess with the soil. So the next year, then I turn that in so that I've got air spaces and nutrients and that kind of stuff in the soil already. And eventually, you have the most gorgeous soil. Raises wonderful everythings.
And with, I mean, not for rocks and such, but if you're using, say, things like bark, would you just turn that into the soil every year?
I just turn it into the soil. And I don't sift the rocks out of my soil. They occur naturally. It doesn't hurt the plant. If they're in containers, they can get real heavy real fast. So, but I don't sift the soil like that. I do sift soil, but it's mainly to get out uncomposted stuff, glass or, you know, something like that that I brought in, pieces of plastic, styrofoam that somehow got there. So, but it's, you know, the more time you spend in your garden, the more relaxed you become, the more fun you have, the more you want to show your stuff off and share. So it's, gardening is fun.
And mulch, it sounds like, can be used decoratively or as well as adding certain nutrients.
Yes. In a strawberry patch, you can put it around your strawberry, the crown, the part that comes out of the ground, and you can push it up tightly. And if you get the kind that's not... it's shredded bark. It's kind of sticky and prickly, and your slugs, you won't have as many slugs there because they don't like that feel. It also elevates the strawberry so they're not sitting in the mud or sitting on top of the soil. Helps them stay clean. They're easier to see. I mean, mulch has a multitude of things, and everybody probably uses something different, calls it mush, fulfills their purpose, and makes them happy. So...
Okay, and this is a call-in show. If you have any questions, you can give us a call at 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723.
Okay, let's talk about seed packets, and the information is there. That's there. And you can get this whatever seed you like, and I have to use the magnifying glass to see because it's just
tiny, yeah.
It is tiny. It gives you the year that it was packaged for, gives you all of the growing requirements. And here, as you're reading down what to do and how to do it, if there's a word you don't know, you can use your laptop or your iPad, Google the word you don't know so you'll better understand what it's telling you. It tells you if it is organic or not, or heritage or not GMO, where it was raised, where it was packaged. All of that information is on your seed packet, and you get a picture of what it's supposed to look like when it comes up. What I'm holding is a lettuce mixture called mescaline. The variety is Valentine because most of the stuff in the package has a red tint. 7 different varieties of lettuce that all come up and mature about the same time. So you can have 7 different colors, 7 different textures added to your salad. I didn't find any words on here that I didn't understand completely, but I've gardened for a long time. But it gives you everything. And if you have questions, there's a help number to call. You know, why didn't it come up? What's going on? How can I fix this? A person answers the phone most of the time. And then if you like the older kinds of seeds, you can get heirloom seeds. Like this is a package of lemon cucumbers found in Thomas Jefferson's garden, among other places. And it's they're easy to grow. They're about the size, a little larger than a golf ball. The skin is yellow. They have a light, sweet cucumber flavor. All the information you need is right there. If you want to know the history of the lemon cucumber, you can look that up. And then at dinner table, when you serve your lemon cucumbers with onions and vinegar, you can say, oh, by the way, about that cucumber. But, yeah.
And some packets have a lot of information. Others just have a few pieces of information,
right.
But certainly, I guess the critical elements are there.
This is from 2016. This is from 2004. And I think I just finished using all the seeds that were in here. Even though it says, you know, packaged for 2004, there's no reason to throw the seeds out if you didn't use them all. They will still be viable for who knows how long and use them. So last year, I took all my basil seeds, even though they were for specific years, mixed them together and sprinkled them on the top of my pots, thinking, well, if 50% is viable, then that's a lot of basil. And it seems as if 99% was viable because I had pots that looked like a forest of little plants. And I didn't want to spend the time transplanting them, so I just left them. And Garden Club sold them for $1. So whoever took them home could have made 8 or 10 pots of basil out of that. But sometimes on your label, it will tell you if it's easy to grow or a bit more difficult. And any specific requirements for that plant is listed there.
So my certain light or water or...
All of that is there. The amount of shade, the hardiness zone... everything. Hardiness zone is the minimum temperatures at which the plant will thrive. So if my cucumber will only survive in zone 9, I need to check my hardiness zone map to see if it's going to be okay where I live. Or I'm going to have to put it in a greenhouse where it will be closer to the specific growing conditions that it wants.
And that's a good question. What zone are we in here?
You know, I'm not sure. I think last year, many of the zones changed. I hate to admit, but I don't really pay attention to that. I will look in other people's gardens. Like we were on the garden tour Saturday, and I saw plants that I thought, wow, I didn't know we could raise that here. And so I talked to the homeowner about, you know, what is that plant for sure, and then go and find it someplace, either order it in or ask one of the nurseries to order it, and then try and duplicate the conditions of where I saw the plant growing, whether it was in deep shade or partial shade or full sun, whether or not it had to be staked. But, yeah, you can get all of that information. Let's talk about, with our tomatoes, determinate and indeterminate tomatoes. A determinate almost all the tomatoes ripen at one time. So it's easy if you plan to make tomato sauce or tomato soup or canned tomatoes because you have a bunch to work with. Indeterminate means that they ripen over a longer period of time. So you could have 5 or 6 in your salad every night as compared to 10 pounds of tomatoes at one time.
Don't they grow differently too? Like, do you have to stake one of them or pinch them back? I can't remember. That seems
I think it's going to depend on the variety because some are upright, some are trailing, some are bush. But whatever your space is that you have to plant tomatoes, that should help you decide what you want. If you want to can tomatoes, then you want determinate. If you just want to eat them throughout the summer, then get indeterminate and try different varieties. Keep notes on which one you like the best. Last year, Silver Fir, Sweet Minion, Tiny Tim did wonderfully for me. The Silver Fir were about plum size, and then I had the Tiny Tim, which looked like a bunch of currants on the vine. And if you like cherries, then you do that. You can get Sun Gold, which is yellow. You can get pear tomatoes. You can get Roma tomatoes. Ones that we see in the grocery store, if we work at it, you can raise your own tomatoes. This year, my tomatoes are going to be like my children. I don't have a greenhouse, so I have a heating mat in my house where I'll bring them in at night, put them on the heating mat so the roots don't get so cold, and then on sunny days, I will take them out, put them on the deck, bring them in at night, and repeat this all summer long so that I have fresh tomatoes.
Are tomatoes challenging to grow? It seems like lots of people grow them.
Oh, I think you can. You just have to know your situation. Greenhouse, on your patio, in a little structure that you have that lets them get sunlight and keeps the rain from beating them to pieces. I live facing the water, so I get a lot of wind, and so that's hard for the tomatoes to survive. So it's easier for me to carry them back and forth. And I've been successful in the greenhouse, in my window, and then this back and forth, in and out, keeping them warm method.
Okay, we just have a few minutes left, so if there are any questions out there, now is the time to call 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723.
Okay, let's spend a minute on the numbers on your fertilizer. The numbers are like a 10-10-10, and that tells you the percentage of the bottle that is each nutrient. 10-10-10 fertilizer would be 10% nitrogen, 10% phosphorus, and 10% potassium. And then that's 30%. So the other 70% would be inert elements. And the nitrogen produces chlorophyll, which helps the plant grow quickly. Phosphorus aids in root development and ability to flower. Potassium guards against disease, drought protection, cold protection, and you can buy bloom boosters, which I love, which would be like 666. And so what you're giving your plant is mostly the element that it needs to have wonderful, huge, lots of flowers.
And are all fertilizers created equal, or is it
no.
You need to check your brands and check
your
things.
Brand. Yeah, and if you want GMO, non-GMO, organic, chemical, natural, all of that stuff is part of your fertilizer.
Okay, and we do have a caller on the line. Hello, what's your question?
Well, it's not a question. It is, but it's just kind of a statement. My mother loved flower, and I tried to transplant a jack in a pulpit. I don't know if you know what that is. I'm from the Midwest.
I do.
And, well, I tried, and I had to study up and find out that it preferred diffused light.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, and I finally got it to grow.
Very good. A success story.
Well, I love listening to this gardening thing. I'm just a gardening freak, I guess.
Very good. Very good. I had that same experience with trying to raise cilantro. I had it in too much shade. And so I had to move it from where I normally planted it and fussed with it and was disappointed back out into the full sun. So, yeah, thanks for sharing.
You have a good day.
All right, thank you. And so do Jack in the Pulpit usually grow here?
No, he said he brought it from the Midwest. I would think that if you're cautious about where you plant it, that you could get it to grow. And it's an interesting little plant.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, anything else? We have a couple, about a minute left.
Let's see. Well, let's talk, I hate to touch on organic and GMO because it's difficult to understand and you really need time to sit and study, or you need to be sitting with an expert. But GMO means genetically modified organism. And what geneticists have done is take plant, animal, virus, and bacteria and combine them to make a stronger plant. And it is, I would guess, 30% of all of our foodstuffs now is a GMO product. And there's now lists of GMO and GMO in danger of being GMO-ized, changed into GMO. And so you have to read very carefully on your packaging label, on your seed labels, if you want to stay away from that. Maybe someday there could be a workshop or a lecture in town helping explain what it does, how it happens, why this is beneficial and how it is not beneficial, so that people could better understand and make a better informed decision. Certified organic, there are 21 different steps an individual or a grower has to go through before he can claim USDA certified organic. Many of us are organic gardeners because we don't use chemical fertilizer. We don't use GMO. We are careful with what we buy as soil and seeds and fertilizers. So it's just, gardening is interesting.
Okay. All right. Well, we're out of time. Thank you so much, Lee, for coming
in.
And giving us all that good information.
You're welcome. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. And it's just a few minutes before 9. We're going to head over to some announcements.